So the conclusions I walked away with from this talk were Mike and his students are great. Graphical models are great because you can express more in them than anyone would have ever thought possible. Gibbs sampling is great because it's kind of a generic technique that works with any graphical model. And MATLAB is great. So in this talk, I'd like to ask, could NLP be this nice? Well, parts of it already are. You don't have to be an expert in language modeling in order to build a language model. There are good toolkits. You don't really have to know how SVMs work in order to train one. There are good finite state toolkits. There are now good graphical model toolkits. On the other hand, if you want to build a parser or machine translation system, those are harder games to get into. And you are probably working with your own code. You're probably sweating over it a lot in order to engineer it to the point where it will run fast enough. And you will probably recoil from the idea of modifying it too much, because the changes may require you to reorganize stuff. Okay. So this talk is about a toolkit which supposedly is general enough for these cases. And you can do, for example, finite state stuff in it, including you know, maybe an HMM with some complicated factorial state space, as we saw in some of yesterday's MT talks, all the way up to Turing machines. It's called DINA, short for dynamic programming. I cannot say everything that I would like to say in this talk, so go look at the paper. When you're done with the paper, go to the website. You can download it, or if you want to wait till it's bulletproof, sign up for updates by email. But as you'll see, we are using it to do real work, and you can too. Here's, I think, the development process for a system. You start out with some cool model, like a graphical model. That doesn't tell you which variables are observed and which ones are hidden. So you have to turn this into equations which will efficiently do the message passing for you and compute the things you need from the things you have. Then once you have this equational specification, you have to figure out what order to compute things in. So this is the nested loops of CKY. And then finally, you have to code it and worry about a number of issues of what your data structures are going to be to make this efficient. Okay. And while you're doing that, you may be wondering this. And one of the big motivations for this work is that I had to implement the same kind of stuff one too many times. You have to worry about how to store the chart and how to index it. I'm thinking of a parse chart here, but your space of hypotheses more generally. You want your data structures to be smart enough they stay in cache. You probably want to do some pruning or prioritization of a best first or A star agenda. You need to manage your parameters in memory and write them off to disk somewhere, so you need a file format for that. You need to worry about training. You know, there's just a lot to do, and it gets tedious. And when you're using a computer and something feels tedious, you say, okay, maybe we could do this with a Perl script or something, and get rid of the drudgery. So we started out trying to write a toolkit. It actually turned into something that looks a little more like a language. And the language focuses on this level of an equational specification of your problem. So it's not the graphical model. It's one level down. It's the message passing algorithm. Most programs, actually, if you ignore I/O, are really just doing some kind of computation. They're trying to compute some values from some other values. And the order in which you compute them isn't really important as long as it's efficient. Some programs also need to go one step farther and maintain the outputs if the inputs change. And I'll just let you look at this list of things, including a couple of NLP things, where you might want to change the inputs and see what happens to the outputs. Okay, so the other parts of the slide are for the compiler to worry about. And we'll come back to this. But right now, I want to show you what the notation looks like for writing these equations. Okay, int a equals b times c. This looks familiar, I hope, but it means something different. This isn't assignment. It's actually in equality, because if you change b or c, a will eventually be updated so that it continues to equal b times c. Here we've defined b using two statements, b plus equals x and b plus equals y. So we've added two things to b. If these are the only statements about b, then this means b equals x plus y. And again, if we change x or y, then b changes. Here c is a sum of three things. Now we're using structured variable names, z1, z2, z3. And if you want to sum over all the z's, You can say C plus equals Z of n, and it'll sum over however many Z's you have at runtime. You don't know at compile time. All the non-zero Z's. And it'll do that because this is a pattern. The capitalized N will match anything. In fact, it's not restricted to matching integers. So if you have Z of things that aren't integers, it'll add those in as well. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so here's some more interesting use of these patterns. We saw this before. This is pointwise multiplication. It says any AI is defined to be BI times CI. If we drop the I from the left-hand side, we just say it's A equals BI times CI. So we're summing over all the I's. And this is a definition of dot product. This could be a sparse dot product. This only kicks in when BI and CI are non-zero, because that's all that it has to do in order to assure correctness. And it's useful if I might, instead of ranging over integers, might range over the vocabulary. For example, if you want to compute a dot product of a query and a document for IR. So there are entire toolkits like Libbo devoted to doing this kind of stuff fast. Matrix multiplication. Okay, if you get this one, you've got it. Okay. This is possibly sparse matrix multiplication. We're defining here A of IK, so an element of matrix A. I and K on the right-hand side are known, because that's what we're defining, but J isn't known, so that's what we're summing over. And that's the definition of matrix multiplication. Okay, well, by now you may see what we're up to. This looks a lot like Prolog. Prolog has Horn clauses, and Dynah has something similar, which let's call Horn equations. The only difference is that now we're doing math inside the rule. So this thing, AIK, instead of just proving it, we establish that it has a particular value. Starts with the default value, and we may discover that its value is something different. And this value is defined in terms of the values of some other things. So a Dynah program is some set of schemata which specify simultaneous equations. This is like Prolog in that we allow, I'm not showing you on this slide, but we allow nested terms. There's the usual kinds of syntactic sugar for lists. It is Turing complete. There are some limitations with respect to Prolog that I won't get into. It's unlike Prolog in that you probably don't want to write a parser in Prolog because it'll backtrack like mad and take exponential time. So we do the usual thing of dynamic programming, storing stuff in charts. And another big difference is that we compile into C++ classes. These handle aspects of computation for you, but you're still going to write a main program in C++, and it'll just call these classes. So in that sense, what you've done is, Dynah is like a toolkit. Okay, I want to show you the inside algorithm, because this is sort of the simplest NLP example that's of any interest. Well, I could have showed you HMMs, but this is a little more interesting. So here we have a word for W from I to J. If we have a word and we have a rewrite rule in the grammar that says we can rewrite X as W, then we have a constituent X from I to J. If we have two constituents next to each other, y from I to the midpoint and z from the midpoint to j, and we're allowed to put them together into an x according to our grammar, then we have an x that goes all the way from I to j. And finally, if we have a constituent of type s, which goes from 0 to n, and n is the length of the sentence, then we've reached our goal, we have a parse. Okay, so this is, in a sense, the essence of CKY. Three rules: a word is a constituent, two constituents next to each other are a constituent, and a constituent that covers the whole sentence is a parse. Okay. Here's how you would call this. Okay. So you compile this, and it gives you something you can compile in, which defines a CKY namespace, which gives you a chart object, which will store everything you need to work with. So there are some things that aren't defined here. We need to specify their values down here instead. We call those axioms. So the grammar and the words aren't specified in the program, we specify them down on the C++ side. And then we say, okay, we want to look up the value of this theorem, the goal that we can prove from the axioms. So we ask for it, and at that point it goes and it does some computation and out pops the goal. So that's the total probability of all parses in this case. And you can browse the resulting proof forest either through a C++ interface or visually. We've been working on a visual debugger. Ask me about that if you're interested, or download it. The interesting thing now happens when we say, let's get some related algorithms. And there's small changes to this program. So suppose you want to do Viterbi parsing. OK, so change plus equals to max equals. So instead of accumulating a sum of all parses, you're accumulating the best parse. Suppose you want to work with log probabilities. Okay, well, we change times to plus. And if we wanted to go back to the inside algorithm with log probabilities, we'd need logarithmic addition, which we give you. Suppose you want to do lattice parsing. Well, instead of a word going from position 0 to position 1 in the sentence, it's now going to go from, say, state 5 to state 9. And instead of having, instead of us being sure that it's there, now the probability is given by the lattice. How about Early's algorithm? Okay, well, here's Early's algorithm in Dyna. It's 6 lines. You can actually get from this to this automatically by something called a magic templates transformation. It turns out to have been noticed previously by Guido Minin. This is a transformation that's well known in the logic programming and deductive databases community, it turns out. So I want to say a word about these kinds of program transformations. If you've got a set of equations, there's probably some other equivalent set of equations. There's lots of equivalent ways to write this system. And if you transform your system from one to another, you may improve the efficiency of the program. Or maybe you want to transform to some related equations. So this defines some values. Maybe you want to get upper bounds on those values or the gradient of your objective function with respect to those values. And you can do this by automatic transformation. So a lot of the parsing tricks I know can be generalized into automatic transformations that we can put into the compiler, and then they'll help other programs as well. And this is one of the motivations for this work. Okay, I'll skip that. Incremental parsing from left to right. Well, this is execution order. You don't actually have to change the program at all. You just add your words one at a time to the chart on the C++ side, and whenever you want, you can check what constituents have been derived so far. How about log linear parse? Similarly, if you want to dynamically change the grammar or change the input, then you can see how that affects the parses. How about log linear parsing? Well, again, you don't have to change the program, because it's the same equations. The only difference is that the probabilities here now don't have to be probabilities. They can be arbitrary weights. If you want lexicalized parsing or synchronous grammars for translation, inversion transduction grammars, basically it's a very similar program. You just add some extra arguments to these terms to keep track of head words or the positions in two languages at once. Okay, so what's going on? How do you actually execute these? We don't want to have to write specialized pseudocode. We want to use a general method, and here's the method. We'll propagate the updates from right to left through the equations. This kind of thing is called an agenda algorithm, or forward chaining, or bottom-up inference. And here's what it looks like. There's pseudocode in the paper, but today we get to see it in PowerPoint. Down here we have a chart of the current values of all the items for which you've already established non-default values. This is like the closed list in an A star algorithm. And here are the rules of your program. And there's one more thing, which is an agenda of updates that you haven't processed yet. So here's a noun phrase from 3 to 5. We're somewhere in the middle of the algorithm, and we want to add 0.3 to its probability. Well, what is its current probability? Let's look in the chart, okay, and we add 0.3 to the current probability. If it hadn't been in the chart, we would have stuck it there as needed with the default value and added 0.3 to that. Now, here's the interesting part. We updated NP3.5. What else has to change? Well, we have to propagate through the equations. So let's see, what do we know about NP3.5? Well, it can combine with a VP. VP, well, we know what J is. J is 5. So it has to be a VP following that. VP from 5 to somewhere. What VPs do we know about that start at 5? Well, we look in the chart, and here comes one. It's, goes from 5 to 9. Okay, so we can combine these to make a sentence S from 3 to 9. And because we added 0.3 to this, we have to add 0.15 to that. But we don't do that immediately. It goes on the agenda for later. And we try to process these things from the agenda in some reasonable order. For example, A star. Here's another thing that goes, another VP that starts at 5. This one goes from 5 to 7. So we can build an NP from 3 to 7 and update that as well. OK, well, that's the only VP. Those are the only VPs that start at 5. But that's not all that we can do with an NP from 3 to 5, because there are some other rules in the program. We can also combine an NP with a preposition before it. So now we want an NP that ends at 3. Okay, let's look for some. Here's one. We're sure there's an NP from 2 to, preposition from 2 to 3. So we combine them into a prepositional phrase, and that goes on the agenda. and so on. Okay? So what's really going on under the hood when we do this? Okay, the compiler provides the following things, at least. For one thing, it gives you, of course, an efficient priority queue. It gives you hard-coded pattern matching, so when you're trying to figure out which rules from your program will fire when you're processing NP3 fried from the agenda, there's some efficient tree of if tests in order to figure out what to do with this NP and what you can build as a result. Okay. And probably most important, there's automatic indexing of the chart, so you can find the things that the VPs that start at position 5 or whatever it is that your program's heart desires. When you build this thing on the left, and when you're checking for matches, you're going to need to copy, compare, and hash terms quickly. And we handle that by converting terms into canonical pointers, so two equal terms will be represented by the same one-word pointer in the machine, which makes them very fast to work with. And the final thing, which I'm not going to have time to talk about a lot, and which we're still optimizing, is efficient storage of the terms. Getting this right is actually crucial, because it's what kills you on speed. Okay, garbage collection and all that good stuff. Okay, so I just want to mention a little subtlety here, which has not shown up in the previous algorithms in the literature, which weren't this general. There are sometimes objects that can combine with themselves. So here's a noun from I to J. Well, this noun, particular noun is an epsilon constituent which goes from 5 to 5. It's possible for an epsilon to combine with itself. Two nouns next to each other combine, and they yield an epsilon, another copy of itself in this case. And in cases like this, or like this, you have to be careful not to double count and not to overwrite things before you're done with them. Okay, how about parameter training? Well, generally you want to maximize some objective function. Let's use Dyna to compute that function. How would you do that? Well, here's a proof forest we saw before. You put in some model parameters, and outcomes the value of goal or some other theorem that you're interested in. So you can think of the program as computing a mapping from your parameter values, like the weights in your grammar, to the value of some theorem. And then we can differentiate that mapping. We want to do that in order to run your favorite optimization algorithm, maybe gradient ascent or conjugate gradient, or EM. And it turns out that if you want to run EM, all you have to do is get the gradient, and you can immediately get the expected counts from the E-step from that. So you don't exactly need an outside algorithm. The gradient algorithm is isomorphic to it. And there's two approaches to computing the gradient. One is a program transformation. As I said before, you could take your original program and transform it to another program which computes the gradients of the original one. So you've got your inside program. You derive the outside algorithm automatically. Another option is backpropagation. So you kind of run that agenda algorithm backwards. And this is good if you're doing pruning or other approximations, because then you can get an exact gradient of the approximate objective function. Which will make your optimizer happy. And we have a training toolkit to help you with this stuff. So it implements these kinds of algorithms. Okay, what can Dyna do beyond CKY? Well, there's a talk this afternoon. There's a talk on Monday. There were a couple of talks earlier this summer. The blue Smith is David Smith, not my co-author on this paper. There's future work. There was a couple of papers last summer. There have been a couple of courses that have used this in teaching, and I've said before that my motivations for doing this was I was frustrated about how all of my past work seemed like it would have been easier if I had had this tool. Okay. And the point is it's easy to try stuff out. So the programs are short, it's easy to fiddle around with them, so can we express everything in NLP? Well, you don't have to, because you're still writing C++. This is just doing the kinds of things that it's good at. We are currently extending the class of allowed formulas, so the kinds of things that it is good at. And you'll be able to do stuff like smoothing inside the Dyna program in future, as well as nice things like neural nets. So this goes beyond, for example, semi-ring parsing. Is it fast enough? Well, sort of. You lose a factor of a few. Are we going to make it faster? Yes, we are. So this is where we're currently losing a lot. We're currently rewriting the low-level term representations to match hand-tuned code. So we think about how we would implement it, and then we want to be able to generalize that. So to give you a real simple example of what I'm talking about, you might want to say that x's should be stored in an array, and y should be stored in a hash, and z shouldn't be stored at all. You want to compute them on demand. This is the kind of stuff that's killing us, and if we fix this by hand in the code, well, we get a factor of 5 speed up. So we're going to be doing that automatically. So here's the synopsis. This has happened, in fact, several times in our lab. A student and I are discussing an idea in the morning, and they come back in the afternoon, and the experiments are running. It's a language for computation. It's especially good for dynamic programming. And it tries to encapsulate the black art of NLP. There's a lot of prior work that I haven't had time to talk about in this talk. We did buy 2 extra pages so we could tell you about it in the paper, because it's important to understand the relationships. And finally, I want to say a number of people have chipped in. Some of them are, you know, they all have other things to do as well. Some of them are undergraduates. Some of them aren't even at Johns Hopkins. And I really want to thank all of them. If you want to check it out, here's the website. Things are not at all in their final state now because we're doing a rewrite, but it may be useful to you, and we answer email. Thank you very much. Yeah, so if you have a unary rule cycle, for example, or if you have, in that case, you may have to solve a linear system or a quadratic system of equations. The current approach, which works well enough in practice, is to solve it by iterative update, which means you keep running the agenda algorithm until numerical convergence. There are other things that we can do and probably will add. For example, you could pass off to the linear equation part to a linear equation solver, and we've tried that for finite state machines, for example, but it's not in here yet. Another thing to say is if you want to eliminate the unary rule cycles offline, you can do that by program transformation, so you only have to do it once rather than everywhere in your parse chart. Enough said. Well, as efficient as you could get asymptotically. I mean, it's no slower than you would write by hand asymptotically. So, sure, you can. These are arbitrary prologue-like terms. You can throw whatever you want into them. The Orley's algorithm I showed you is carrying around lists of unfilled constituents. If you write a synchronous parser, it's carrying around multiple indices. If you're writing a tag parser, you've got discontinuous constituents. Or a parser with gaps. Run. Sorry. Well, we can do CCG and tag parsing, for example. We may want to talk offline about unification, because I'm sure you have a lot of follow-up questions on that. This is not limited to CKY kinds of algorithms. There are algorithms which you can't handle well by dynamic programming. And one direction that I'd ultimately like to take this after the current rewrite is to support things like Gibbs sampling within the language, within the execution model. Well, that's interesting for the structural side also. You can use annealing kinds of techniques in order to, when I say Gibbs sampling, I'm also thinking of simulated annealing, in order to find the best structure subject to some constraints. There's also a lot of work that's going on now in the UAI community in trying to unify graphical models and constraint programming and dynamic programming. And to the extent that people have made progress on that or we can make progress on it, that should ultimately go in also. This is a nice framework, right, for being able to think about stuff.
I think we'll move on to the next